sums it all up. Arsenal, the cream of the crop.
Welcome to the 92nd edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded less than a fortnight before Christmas, on the Monday night before Arsenal visit Manchester City in the Premier League. This podcast is sponsored by GoonerShirts.com, the finest website for all your Arsenal t-shirt needs. I'm your host, Mark Ollington, and I'm carrying on with the same panel from the last podcast, recorded just after the game against Everton on our 125th anniversary. On the other side of the table from me are Steve Ashford, Joe Broadfoot, and from Gunner Talk, special guest, Lindsay Sheehan. Why are you a special guest, Lindsay? It's beyond me, but you are. You're special to us. And I mentioned there the 125 years. Let's get started with that. So first of all, did we do enough to celebrate this momentous occasion in Arsenal history? And what do you think of the statues? That's a question Steve wanted me to ask. So we'll start with you, Steve, about the whole 25-year thing.
Okay.
And the statue thing.
Okay, right. Well, I can remember the 100-year anniversary, and I've still got the commemorative shirts they made for that. But they didn't do anything for the 100th year, or nothing in comparison to what they did on Saturday. So I have to say, what they did was absolutely brilliant. They could still do more over the course of the season, and I hope they do intermittently, you know, celebrate it a bit more. But I thought Saturday was fantastic, really loved it. Not as good as the last game at Highbury. That was the home game to end all home games, when they all walked out round the pitch, hundreds and hundreds of ex-players lined up in the middle. That nothing's ever going to come close to leaving Highbury, the Wigan game. But Saturday was great. I love the statues. I think I saw all three of them on Saturday. I thought they were all magnificent. And people say, oh, well, it doesn't look much like Tony Adams' face. Well, it's not a photo, it's a statue. It looks enough like Tony Adams.
It's the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Steve, how big is the Tony Adams statue?
Big.
Because that's the one I haven't seen.
Yeah, big. Much bigger than the Henry one.
Yeah, Henry's minute. It's smaller than me, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah,
and it's kind of tucked away. Joe, that's what
I know, but it shouldn't be that small. He's 6 foot.
I'm a bit disappointed the Henry one is tucked away in a corner,
whereas
the Herbert Chapman one's right in the middle of a concourse, and so is the Adams one. Mm. Poor Altieri, he's stuck round by a railing. You know, I think they could have put him in the middle of a concourse, really.
That's him wanting to go to Barca, Steve. He has to have a little bit of, like, you know.
Yeah, probably. But my overriding memory of Saturday is looking in the magazine, or the programme, whatever you call it, and for £600 you can buy a scarf, a tie, and a wooden box. Great marketing, I have to say.
Well, that's a question I want to ask you, Lindsay. 125 years, it's not an anniversary that's often celebrated. Do you see it as just a money-making exercise by the club, or does it actually mean something to you?
Oh, let's stop moaning, shall we? Honestly, everything they do, I thought it was a really lovely day. I had tears in my eyes when Thierry came out. I loved watching his statue being dedicated to him. It does, to me, look a little bit like he should be in my back garden with water coming out of his willy in some kind of water feature. Because it is quite a random, frosted pose, isn't it? Yeah. But obviously it's iconic for that moment against the Spurs. I really enjoyed it. I don't think we can set... You know, there's a lot of talk. We sing a lot of songs about Man City and Chelsea not having any history. We've got it. We have got it. Why not celebrate it? Why not give the fans something to cheer about and enjoy it? And actually start the new kids that have started, who just know Arsene Wenger and just know success, to actually realise how this club was formed. And I thought it was really classy getting the grandkids to come out. I thought that was lovely, to think their grandfather would,
What other club in the world would have done that?
And the Rocky Roadcastle chant, his son was there. His son looked really touched, didn't he?
Oh, God, yeah. And to see Robert Pires looking around the stadium as if to say, oh my God, this is the best place in the world, you know. And there should be a statue for Pires.
Yeah.
He's gorgeous.
I've got one in my room at home.
Yeah.
But speaking of statues, did it bother you that the club wasn't kind of touched from 1935 to 1985? There's 50 years there of the 125-year history that's not mentioned at all in our statues, and two very modern players. Is that just a sign of the times, everyone knows Adams and knows Henry? Or should we have, like, Frank McClintock there or something like that? Did it bother you, the choice of the three players? Joe?
Well, because of my hairstyle, I've got to go with the 70s players. They were the biggest heroes of mine, the 70s players.
But do you think they got the choice right? Would you have gone differently?
Maybe. To be honest, I'd probably go with Henri, because I would have to pick somebody from the modern era, and it would have to be Henri because of the amount of goals he scored, and particularly as he started off life getting the kind of grief that Theo still gets to this day. Not from Steve at all.
No, I always loved Henri.
right from the word go.
Right from the word go.
Because he got an awful lot of stick in the beginning.
Even from the first game, I just thought, this guy is not Theo Walcott. I didn't even know Theo Walcott then.
But
I just thought, this guy is not Theo Walcott.
Anyway, we digress. But no, I would take somebody like Frank McClintock. He was for me, he was the first Arsenal icon, if you like. It was Frank McClintock, Charlie George, obviously. But I'd probably go for McClintock, bearing in mind he was captain. So, and you know, he lifted our first double, let's not forget. So
McClintock was the first player I ever saw at Arsenal coming upstairs. As I was coming up the stairs from Arsenal Station, he used to go through the green gates. There used to be a little gents' toilet on the right. You'd go up the steps, North Bank would be on your left. And as you got to the top of them steps, you'd see the lovely green pitch and the east end. And the green bathed pitch and the floodlights. Now, I remember the first thing I ever saw at ours was a night match against Leicester in 1968. McClintock and I think Simpson were holding an offside trap. And they were both standing with their arms outstretched to catch the other players offside. And I remember seeing McClintock standing like a statue with his arms outstretched, appealing for offside. And I just thought, my God, this is brilliant. I'm going to come here forever. And I have done ever since.
So perhaps I can add a statue of Frank to go with the free up, which would be quite nice.
Seeing as he was in a statue stance at the time as well. Yeah. And we had that moment captured on the podcast.
But there is it, isn't it? Because every fan is going to have a player and every fan is going to have a moment. I mean, you could argue Bergkamp, you could argue a fan's favourite for Rocky, really. Everyone is going to have a bit of an argument. I quite like the three they've chosen. I could have maybe put my own 2 pence worth in, but I thought they were good. I'm not quite sure what's going on with Tony Adams' buttocks, though. They look a bit odd to me. I know that's probably something that just a woman notices, but, you know, not his hair, it was his buttocks that I noticed.
Indeed, and we'll move on to other topics soon, but I wanted to ask you all, which player was you most happy to see back for the parade at the start? What one gave you the most thrill and buzz? Lindsay, Thierry for you, was it?
I loved Limpar, though. You know, it was different. Oh.
Slightly greyer, but still his cheeky Swedish impish charm.
Yeah, just that little cheeky face. I'd all threw it up, Bobby as well. I mean, honestly, it was just a beautiful lineup, wasn't it? It was just a really lovely day.
Your man crush for Bobby is well known, Steve.
I would marry Robert Pirès, so it has to be Robert Pirès for me.
Joe?
I wouldn't marry Robert Pirès, and it's not because he's the wrong sex. It's just he wasn't my favourite because he was... He was coming in, taking the place of Mark Overmars, and I loved Mark Overmars. Couldn't get over my Mark Overmars crush. And when Pirès came in, I said, "Where's your pace? Where is it? Show me." And he didn't have it to the same degree that Mark Overmars had. Overmars, I'm not going to.
Overmars is wonderful, but Robert Pirès, come on, Joe.
No, I will take Overmars over Pirès.
Overmars was an absolutely brilliant player.
Pirès always cut inside, and it kind of irritated me.
You got irritated by Robert Pirès.
I got irritated by him a lot. I was moaning like crazy about him, although, you know, he had some.
He didn't have pace, but he could read the game like no one else.
Listeners, don't worry, we're moving on. We're now going to go from the positive to perhaps the more worrying. Robin van Persie, we've mentioned his contract before, running down. We've mentioned also the transfer players we might buy in January in the last podcast. Do you think that will have any bearing at all on if he's going to stay? Or is it more about what we win this season? Lindsay?
Oh, it's such a difficult one. I can't profess to know his head. I would think he'd want a statement of intent, if you want my gut feeling, because I think they all do. I think when you are a player on fire, you want to play with the best. I think he obviously understands, after working with him for so long, Wenger's policy, that obviously we don't buy superstars, we make them. And he'll understand that. However, I think, like us fans, he realises we're still probably a bit short.
Would you go with that, Steve?
I very much agree with Lindsay. He's 28, coming on 29. He hasn't won any trophies in his career.
FA Cup, did he win?
One trophy, FA Cup. I think he wants to win trophies and he wants big money. So we've got to convince him that we can pay him big money and win trophies. The big money is probably the more difficult thing of the two, but I think if we went out in January and spent 20 or 30 million on a creative midfielder, and then early in the summer spent a similar amount on another player anywhere in the team, maybe a striker, and then gave him 125 grand a week to stay, he might stay. But even then, he's going to get offered 180, 200 from Man City and Barcelona. We've got to convince him that he loves Arsenal, he's going to get an excellent salary here, and if we sign those players and ally them to the players we've got now, he might have a chance of winning trophies. And I think if he's on an excellent salary and he thinks he can win trophies here, he'll stay.
We haven't done a great job of doing that so far.
No, though. We haven't.
Is he different, Joe, to the Cesc Fabregas's and Nasri's of this world, do you think?
I think he's different to Nasri because I really feel, I mean, maybe I'm just getting influenced by what the club are trying to make us believe, but I actually believe Nasri moved purely for money. Fabregas moved because he's always loved Barcelona. So in a sense, I'm sort of seeing Van Persie will stay if we win something, and not the FA Cup.
I think he owes us. I mean, he spent a lot of time in his club at Arsenal injured.
Yeah,
and
he does.
And the fans part with him, having season after season of half campaigns. Mm. Is there part of him you think he might want to stay because he owes something to the Arsenal fans? Or is that naive talk from, you know...
Well, I think he would stay he wouldn't be leaving next year unless we want to sell him, right? So he could see out his contract and then leave the following year. But then the club's not going to let that happen. So then it turns into a Nagy situation whereby we've got to sell the guy while he's still got some residual value, because otherwise he'll have none. So I'm seeing it, he's gonna probably get sold kind of against his wishes unless he signs a new deal. And why should he sign a new deal if we're not going to win something? And we're certainly not going to win the league. And the FA Cup, I don't think would convince him to stay. The Champions League, we've got a slight chance of winning that. So if we win the Champions League, Van Persie will stay. That's my view.
Steve, so Joe thinks he'll stay if we win the Champions League. Gut feeling, would he sign a new contract
I think he would probably stay if we won the Champions League.
But if we don't?
But, I mean, the chance of us winning the Champions League is pretty negligible, to be honest.
16-1, I'd say.
Yeah, I think pretty negligible. I think he needs a statement of intent. We're going to have to spend some money on creative players, and we're going to have to give him twice what he's earning now. Because at the end of the day, he could go to Manchester City and earn $220,000 a week.
But I don't think it's all about money. That's one thing I don't think Van Persie's about.
But you say that about every player, don't you? How many times you've been brokenhearted about it and think that one won't go, that one won't go. I mean, when Henry went, that just killed me.
And he is managed by Darren Dean.
Yeah.
And every player that's managed by Darren Dean...
Please.
That has come up to the end of his contract at Arsenal has left.
It's a good point, Steve.
It's almost like he's getting his own back on what Arsenal did to his dad.
It's a point worth marking.
I hate it when an Arsenal player is managed by Darren Dean.
So we can turn this all around just by inviting David back onto the board.
Yeah.
Which is what we've all been saying.
You'd think they'd use their noddle and do that, wouldn't you?
That would make an awful lot of sense.
Indeed. So, just say Arsenal finished second this season and don't win any cups, don't win the Champions League, don't win the FA Cup. Would that for you make a good, successful season? Steve?
God, yeah. If we finished second this year, given that we were...
I mean, Man U on the slide a little bit, aren't they? Chelsea were losing a few games. It's not beyond the realms.
Yeah. Man United beat us 8-2 in August. I wouldn't swap our current first team for Man United's in any shape or form. I think we've got a better first 11 than they have. And I think when they come to the Emirates later in the season, we'll prove that. There's every chance we can finish second. And if City have a wobble, and who knows whether they might, we could even win it. I'll probably be in a bit... fantasy riddled, but second is achievable, definitely.
What success for you this season, Lindsay?
I think unfortunately our expectations have to have been a little bit lowered, and second would seem like a massive achievement considering where we've come from this season. I'd like to see this with the pot. I've got to be honest, the FA Cup would do me.
Joe, what success for you?
Yeah, I said all that stuff about the FA Cup not being enough for Van Persie, but it would be enough for me. It would be so great just to see a piece of silverware, you know, instead of the Emirates Cup. And we can't even always win that.
Well, and it's also not on next season because Olympics.
Yeah, I know. Another reason to hate the Olympics.
Well, we're now entering what I call the hot topic part of the podcast, the feature everyone loves the best, my host. Let's go for it. Hot topic. Now, it's been suggested by some of the media, even some Arsenal fans, that Spurs currently have a better squad than Arsenal. True or false? Let's start with you on that one, Joe.
I'm saying false. Apart from the ex-Arsenal player playing up front, which I wouldn't swap him for Robin van Persie. Other than that, I'm just
trying to think. Jovino, though.
Gareth Bale for Jovino?
No, Adebayor for Jovino. Which is what Adebayor for Jovino?
That's a tricky one because they're playing different positions. I'm not too sure about that one. I need more time to think about it.
Joe, but you have a little thing.
Through the whole squad, if you look through the whole squad, I think their squad, to be honest, their squad is probably stronger than ours. But our first 11 is stronger than theirs.
Interesting. Lindsay.
Every time I come on the podcast, you make me say nice things about Tottenham Hotspur.
We're saying horrible things then, Lindsay.
Right, well, because I've got to be a bit honest, haven't I? I think that Tottenham are in the best place they've been for a very long time. I think they have got strength and depth in their squad. I still think that we're the fucking Arsenal of Tottenham Hotspur, but I think our first 11 are better than them. There are a few I'd nick, in all honesty.
Which ones, Lit? Go on.
So,
you've got to say, one Spurs player, you don't need to answer to. One. Just one, Lindsay, come
There's
on.
Three that you
and then you can wash your mouth out with your Smirnoff ice.
Go on then, you tell them the three and we'll pick one.
Can I say one?
You can all say one.
Gareth Bale.
What, Bale of Nazareth?
Yeah, we'd all have Gareth Bale, wouldn't we? Let's
because
be
he should have joined Arsenal in the first place. I think we were scouting Gareth
Bale. We chose Theo Walcott.
Given that Theo Walcott...
No, we scouted both.
Given that Theo Walcott plays wide right or wide left and he kind of alternates during matches,
yeah.
and Gareth Bale is predominantly left-based, I would swap Walcott for Bale tomorrow. I would probably also swap Modric for Aaron Ramsey, although he's a bit older. I love Aaron Ramsey, but you have to admit, Modric is a world-class player.
A little bit lightweight, Steve. I mean, Aaron Ramsey does stick his foot in now and again.
But he's had from a long time
season.
Off,
and he's been
he?
Off for a while. Yeah.
He's a young boy, and he's got time.
But Modric is technically a better player.
Technically.
Yeah. At the moment.
Okay.
Steve? He just looks like a rat, though, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, there's no dispute there. The guy isn't probably a
wanker. We're basically taking a rat and a monkey.
Yeah, and let's face it, Modric did put in a transfer request at the start of the season and was desperate to join Chelsea, so he obviously loves Tottenham.
And Van der Vaart, probably. I'd love Van der Vaart in our team. So if I could have Bale, Modric and Van der Vaart in our first team, I'd have all those three.
Van der Vaart's very injury-prone.
Mm. Which team's better, though, Steve?
I think we're going to beat them next time we play.
Ask the hot topic question. And I think which squad's better?
We're going to finish above them. We're going to beat them if we get them in the FA Cup, home or away. We're in the Champions League, they're in the Europa Thursday night league.
Which they might go out tomorrow.
Absolutely. We said I won't have anything after that. And we will beat them next time we play them at the Emirates.
So which squad's better, Steve?
Ours.
Lindsay?
Well, I said, I think that their squad's got more depth in it. I think they've, you know, we've got a very good first 11 with maybe three or four decent backup players. I think they've got quite a, you know, their midfield seems to go on forever.
Kyle Walker's quite a good player, I have to say. Kyle Walker's all right. Probably better than our reserve right backs. Maybe not as good as Sagna.
You see, when you start looking at goalkeepers, for instance, their strength and depth shows against ours, our lack of it. We've got Chesney. I mean, I wouldn't swap Chesney for anyone in the world.
Yeah, but I've seen Gomez and Rosie Fabianski.
To be honest, I would take Gomez over Fabianski.
I wouldn't swap Gomez for Almunia.
Or maybe I'd swap Gomez for Almunia.
On a good day, Gomez is amazing, but he has a lot of bad days, luckily for us.
I'd be a bag of nerves with Gomez in goal. More so than Almunia.
But essentially, we all agree, really, overall, that our squad's still better than theirs.
Look at their centre-halves. Yesterday, I was playing 38-year-old Gallus at Stoke against another. Kabul. Eunice fucking Kabul. Who shit is he?
On that point, Steve, that so ends the hot topic.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone. tonight, Chelsea are entering Manchester City. Now, we've got an idea what the result is going to be, but we finished this in time. We're going to go to the pub to watch the second half, which is why we're doing quick podcasts tonight. Is anyone here worried that City will do what Wenger did and go a season unbeaten? Are they capable? Joe, are you worried, mate?
I'm not worried at all. I don't think City are going to go the whole season unbeaten. There's no way in this world that's going to happen. I mean, United will probably beat them next time they play them. For starters, I mean, you know, a local derby is always tricky, but the problem is, because they're in Manchester, they haven't got as many local derbies as we've got. As someone once pointed out to me, you know, it's always a difficult season for Arsenal when they've got all these London derbies coming up. So a friend of mine, who's a lifelong gooner, he's always checking how many London teams are actually in our league. And, you know, that's a deciding factor, because it's like the Fulham game, for instance. I mean, I thought, that should be 3 points, but then again, it's a London derby, so maybe we'll have to settle for one. And that, of course, that's how it turned out. And then that one could end up as none, and that could happen to it's just the one big derby, right? Other than Wigan are not going to turn City over.
When you've got three London teams that all hate each other in the top four, Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs, I mean, every time they play each other, it's a London derby, a fierce London derby, and United only have to play one rival to the same extent. Maybe Liverpool to the same extent as well. Mm. But we also have to play QPR, West Ham, Fulham, Charlton, whoever else is up there as well. I know you could say that United have to play Blackburn and Wigan and all that, but they're not quite as good teams, I don't think. I think Chelsea, Arsenal and Spurs, whenever we do well in the Premier League, we have to earn it because of the number of London derbies we have.
Yeah, so, and when West Ham are up there as well, I mean, it's always a potential banana skin,
it really is.
It is, that's a very good point, but you're not answering my very important question, Steve. Will Man City go the season unbeaten?
Oh, will they go the season unbeaten? Well, I don't want to risk it. I want them to lose as soon as possible so I can sleep easy in my bed at night and know that Lady Invincible is safe in her bed.
Lindsay?
No, they won't go unbeaten. There's so many factors that come into it. You know, that is a feat that it's, and lots of people have been touted as taking that crown. And they've just imitated us. They've never beaten it. So I don't think they will.
And to finish off the podcast for tonight, you know, Man City are currently riding high. At this halfway stage of the season, before it's Christmas time, and we can all look forward to our turkeys, if you're vegetarian, and nut roast, whatever you might particularly have. Let's now make our predictions for who's going to finish first and where Arsenal are going to come. Lindsay, it's got to be done. The punters love predictions. It's what they live and breathe this podcast by. So I'm going to start with you, Steve, while Lindsay sits there thinking, you know.
Who's going to win the league?
Who's going to win the league and where will Arsenal finish?
Man City are going to win the league. Arsenal are going to finish third.
Joe?
That's exactly what I said prior to the season start.
Is it really just that on this podcast as well, did you think?
I think I said that. The one thing I might change is the fourth position. I think I said City first, United second, Arsenal third, and I think I put Chelsea fourth, but I might put Spurs fourth, sorry.
Not Liverpool?
No.
Interesting. Now, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm sorry to be a little bit boring and agree with everybody, but I think it'll be a Manchester top two, and I think it'll be being between us, Chelsea, and Spurs for the third and fourth. I don't think Liverpool will be in it, and I think it might be Chelsea that drop.
Would it bother you if City win the league, the fact that almost another club's entered into the kind of elite that have won the Premier League title?
The trouble is, it's bothered me since 2008 when they, you know, when that Sheikh Mansour bought the club. I mean, and the reason is that you've got Chelsea and City with bottomless pockets, and everyone else is fighting for the other two spots. So all the time, I mean, let's imagine that another Sheikh comes in next year, this time from Qatar, and maybe buys, you know, Everton. And they spend 140 million on players. I mean, we're never going to finish in the top four ever again if that happens, because we just cannot compete with those teams.
What we really need is a Russian with loads and loads of money to buy into Arsenal that has billions.
Oh my God, who could that be?
What, the Man United family?
And on that point, we'll take another short break before we call it our third and final podcast of the evening. For those of you who have just caught this one, if you want to email us, please do. The email address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. And if Steve's here for the next one, he promises to read out every email that he gets and answer everyone in full. Isn't that the case, Steve?
Definitely.
So that's something to look forward to. To encourage you all to write in your comments on this very podcast. Thanks once again to our sponsors, goonashirts.com. This is your host, Mark Ollington, bidding you a fond farewell. Have a brilliant Christmas and New Year, everyone. And thank you very much for listening.
La di da di da, la di da di di, all good friends and jolly good company. Hooray!
Do you think we could be little mates?
Who's the fat one that looks like
Jingle bells. The fat one's a minger, isn't she?
I must stop that. That bit's on there at the end.